Hey everyone, it's Rich Bennett, host of Conversations with Rich Bennett, bringing you an exciting chance to win with our latest giveaway sponsored by Tar Heel Construction Group. Get ready to make a splash just by tuning in to the podcast. Yes, you heard that right. While you're soaking up our latest episodes, listen closely for a special splash sound. When you hear it, remember the episode name. Here's what you do next. Shoot us an email at podcast@harfordcountyliving.com with the episode title. Each splash sound means a new chance to win. So the more you listen, the better your chances. If you don't have email, then just leave a voicemail from our website at conversationswithrichbennett.com. What's the prize? How about a brand new waterproof Bluetooth speaker? Perfect for listening to our episodes, whether you're in the bath, on the beach, in the pool, or on the go. You have until the end of May to send in your entries, and we'll announce the lucky winner on June 3rd. Don't miss out on this splashy opportunity brought to you by Tar Heel Construction Group. Dive into our episodes and win big. There are a lot of great podcasts out there, and one of the things that I've been doing is recommending a podcast at the end of each episode. So make sure you stay tuned to the very end, because I guarantee you the podcast I recommend, you're going to love. It shouldn't be hard for you to manage your business, and it shouldn't require a lot of your time, and it shouldn't be hard for your employees to handle most things without you, and it definitely should not require that you must always get involved. This is where the well-oiled machine process comes in. And you're going to find out about that on this episode. Enjoy the conversation.
Coming to you from the Freedom Federal Credit Union Studios, Harford County Living presents Conversations with Rich Bennett.
Come on.
You're faster than me.
Guys.
Hey,
yeah, that was quick.
I got
to take on my 24th. Oh, man, you already said it. I was going to ask her if she remembered the date. I had the pleasure today. I'm sitting here with Carrie Prejean. I'm sorry. Out of Louisiana, Baton Rouge. Never been there, but I got to get down there one of these days. And he is the founder of CFO Consulting. And when it comes to experience, he's got plenty of it. 35 years of experience as a CFO. He also taught at, you ready for this? LSU. That's, for those of you that don't follow college, that's Louisiana State University. University of Louisiana Lafayette, Southeastern Louisiana University, and Baton Rouge Community College. Is there anything I'm missing there, Carrie?
No, sir.
That's it? You sure?
That's it.
And you've actually been in the field for, well, for 35 years. So when it comes to businesses and the important part, the money, you might as well just say you're the expert at it, correct?
I've been around. I like to think I'm pretty good. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I want, before we get into the business part, I have to ask you this because I saw it on your bio.
Mm-hmm.
So you did your own radio show for a while?
Yeah, I had a radio show for about a year. It was on a Saturday afternoon. That was a slot they wanted me on. It kept getting in the way of LSU football. In the fall. So it was fun. I enjoyed it. Got to talk to a lot of people, but I gave it up after a year.
I just want to get right into it. So why do you think some people have a hard time managing their business?
Generally, it's because they're not good at managing. If you're going to start a business, you probably have an entrepreneurial mindset, which means mm-hmm. that you're going to see opportunities where other people see risk. You're going to be very action-oriented. You're not going to see obstacles as obstacles. You're going to see just a road sign to tell you to take a different route to get where you want. You're going to be impatient. And you're going to be frustrated with, why don't people see what I see? And because they're not. To manage something, it's a totally different skill set. Management means
right.
Some of the best managers I know, they say what they want out of the business. They want boredom. They want monotonous cycle of make the sale, collect the money, produce the goods, ship them, whatever. They don't want any kind of big, exciting. It doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to fly this way one day and do the other one. And entrepreneurs will get in there and they'll do that. I've seen entrepreneurs right. change processes up that are working because it looks boring to them. So yeah, a lot of entrepreneurs who become business owners get stuck in their business by managing, micromanaging their business because, again, they see the world a certain way and they don't understand why people don't see the same thing they do. And so it's kind of like De Niro in Casino. He talks about there's three ways to do things around here. There's the right way, there's the wrong way, and the way I do things. And most entrepreneurs right. are very, very geared into do things my way, even though the people they hire will probably do a better job if the owner just got out of the way. In fact, what happens to the organization with the owner micromanaging is the message that gets to the employees is, I don't trust you to do your job. I don't think you're competent. You're not going to do it my way. We have to do it my way. Basically, I have to come in here and rescue. So what it creates is an organization that's, what's the old expression? Neurotically codependent or neurotically dependent on the owner. Now the owner spends most of his day putting fires out, because employees are trained. You can only take things so far. And then, don't step right. outside the box. Don't take any initiative. Don't think for yourself. When things get bad enough, the owner will step in and fix it. And of course, you'll probably yell and fuss at people because they're, but so what happens is the owner becomes a glorified W-2 employee of the business. They're working 80 to 100 hours a week. They're constantly frustrated because it seems like they just can't get the business out of second gear. And they don't realize that they're the problem. They're the bottleneck.
So do you think that's one of the reasons that a lot of these businesses fail?
To an extent, the business can't really grow that much with that kind of micromanagement stuff. The owner has two big jobs. Any business owner has two big jobs. One is to be a visionary. You're supposed mm-hmm. to be able to scan the horizon, see the opportunities and the perils of the risks that are coming at you, seize the opportunities, navigate around or eliminate the risk, right? That's one job.
Right.
The second job is, what do you start the business for? Because you could generate a lot of revenue through some, either you're a good salesman, you're good at manufacturing or construction or wholesaling. There's some business process you saw that, hey, I can make more money for myself. Generally, you start out doing it for somebody else, you work for somebody else. And you say, hey, I'm really good at this. I'm going to go start my own business.
Right.
And so your second job is either primary income generator. When you get away from those two things, that's when businesses get in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to see a study too, where people that get into business to run their own business and are doing it wrong. I would love to see a study of how many of those, because of the stress, because they're not doing it properly, have health problems, whether it be, heart attack or stroke or something like that.
Yeah.
Because I know that number's got to be high.
Yeah, I would say it's pretty high because a lot of guys, because I mainly know men business owners mm-hmm. down here, but most of the men that I see micromanage their businesses do have health problems. A lot of them are overweight. They got high blood pressure. Some are diabetic. Some have some bad habits like drinking too much.
Right.
Because they're consumed with the business. They're working 80 to 100 hours a week. You don't have time to exercise with that. You don't feel like exercising if you're working that much. They're just consumed with trying to take care of the business, working 7 days a week. For them, their idea of relaxing and feeling better is go home and have a, slug a few drinks down and go eat a big steak or something.
And there's probably some of them that are actually drinking at work too, as well.
Yeah.
I've seen that in the past.
Seen that as well. Yeah.
Are you crazy? What are you doing? It's like, you're not supposed to be doing that. So I guess one of the other things is, with these people that are having problems, they have poor time management skills. It also sounds like,
well, yeah. If you have to go rescue everything that every process mm-hmm. in your business all day long, all week long, how can you manage your time? Your time is being managed by the crisis of the hour.
Right.
How do you manage that? How do you manage your time when that's what you're plugged into?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Yeah, I don't understand that. And I don't get why some people actually decide to go into business for themselves and do this, and they don't really put together, even if you're a solopreneur, you're doing it yourself, mm-hmm. you should still have a business plan.
Right.
And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand how to do, how to put together that business plan to look at it. If, okay, well, I'm leaving my job at 40 hours a week because I know I can do it better and make more money. And then you're working, like you said, 80 hours plus a week, and you have really no family time.
Nope.
So it's also causing stress in the family, not just amongst yourself, but, you know, in the family. And I don't think a lot of people look into that. They just want to say, I own my own business.
Right.
Well, what are they going to say when that business fails?
Yeah.
You know, I gave it a shot. I think if you plan ahead and you focus on it and you don't worry about, like you said, the micromanaging and all that, you're going to be successful.
Yeah. You need to hire a team that's going to do the things that you're not good at.
You know, right.
For a business, for an entrepreneur to sit there and like process accounts payable or mm-hmm. generate sales invoices or get shipping done, it drives them crazy. Why? Because it's repetitive, same thing over and over again. Most entrepreneurs are very high energy. They need a lot of variety. You know, they'll bounce around. They do well in crisis. And that's part of the reason they get stuck in the micromanaging, because it's, you know, they get to solve the crisis of the hour all day long and they get to be the hero. And what they feel. And again, all this stuff is, they're not doing it on purpose. They just don't see.
Yeah.
They don't see that they're the bottleneck. What they don't see is, you know, their perspective. And again, we all have a perspective, and our perspective is driven by our narrative. Our narrative is sitting there telling us, you know, basically what we, let me put it this way. Your narrative is going to create your reality, right? It generates your set of prejudices and assessments and value judgments, all that stuff. That's going to, for the most part, dictate what you experience in life. And, you know, we all got differences. So, you know, you can have the event and then you have the interpretation. And that's why you can have several people in the same event and have very different experiences or very different explanations of it. You know, think of a roller coaster.
Right.
So these entrepreneurs get out there and, you know, they're, because the way they see the world is the right way. They're impatient with and not very tolerant of other people doing it differently, even if it's better. They don't even give it a chance. So that's where they get stuck in this stuff, and they're blind basically to that they're the bottleneck.
Yeah. Now, with your background, do you see a lot of them also putting basically wasting money? And we talked about this on another podcast, because I've seen people, and I talked to a friend of mine, like he was renting a building, or, well, he was renting space, but he never had anybody coming there. And then he realizes, like, why am I spending all this money on a space if I don't have people coming to me? I don't need to.
Well,
so do you see that a lot too, where people are just wasting money on things they don't need to use? Or
yeah. You know, you see somebody, especially when somebody gets to be fairly successful, you know, they've made a fair amount of money. They've built a business. They suffer from a disease I call affluenza. And next thing you know, they're buying boats and second homes.
Oh yeah,
you know, that kind of stuff. And they run it all through the company. So what happens is, you know, they buy some of this extravagant stuff, and when the business experiences a downturn, and they all do, all of a sudden these things become like, you know, stones going to drag the business to the bottom. The other thing is some people it's a matter of, I want to build a monument to my ego. So yeah, they go out and get some class A office space. And really what they need is more of a warehouse with a small office up front that, you know,
right,
be almost industrial grade, or maybe not need an office at all. The other thing I've seen more recently is that a couple of people that I was working with, that in the really good times, they built these pyramids, I guess, in terms of office buildings. I mean, this one guy has, he's in the, fire and safety products business.
Right.
And he built this $4.5 million building. No customers ever come there. And it's got marble everything. It's got fine wood everything. He's got, you know, big old kitchen with all the finest, you know, kitchen gear you could think of.
Jeez.
Sub-zero refrigerators and freezers. elevator, you know, with the got security system, like you have to have an ID badge to walk around. I mean, it's a knocked out looking building, but when his business turned down, he had to go finance the building because he had paid cash for it. Well, now he's got a mortgage on the building that's about $25,000 a month. And yeah, so you know, what happens is, you know, what I first told him when we started working together is like you've structured your business right now to where it's going to fail. You need to restructure it, or you will fail. You will run out of money because you're doing a slow bleed with your cash flow. And anyway, so and fortunately, he got lucky with the PPP loan program. It basically put, I don't know, probably $1.5 million, $1.8 million into his business that got forgiven. And in the meantime, I told him he needed to diversify his market because it's totally concentrated in the oil and gas industry, doing all the safety stuff for offshore oil rigs. So I said, you need to get into the commercial business side of this. I mean, there's universities, there's hospitals, there's police stations, there's all kinds of places you need to be diversifying into. Right. And thankfully, during the COVID thing, he listened and he focused the marketing and the sales, you know, diversifying out of the oil field. So it looks like he's gonna do all right. He's gonna do, you know, he's on his road to becoming very successful again.
Now, does he still have the building, or did he sell that?
No, I mean, he's not gonna sell it for what he owes on it right now.
Well, that's true too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I had him entertain was, would you be willing to let like a law firm or somebody, you know, because it's good, it's some prestigious looking office space. I said, we want to let a law firm rent the downstairs and you just have everybody upstairs, because every other office was empty. And he could
help. Jeez. What? Yeah. But that would make sense.
Huh?
That would make sense if he did that. Rented that out.
I think it was a little bit much for his ego. You know, it'd be admission that he had screwed up.
Wow. That's a shame. You know what? So real quick, because a lot of business owners, and people that are thinking about getting into business, they should hire somebody like you. So what's the website and how can they get in contact with you?
My website is strategicbusinessadvisors.org.
Very simple to remember. And I'll have the links in the show notes for that as well.
Appreciate it.
So the next thing, how can you actually help people elevate their business?
Well, the first thing we do is we make sure you're getting actionable financial data, like on a weekly basis. You need to be getting dashboards on all your KPIs, at least 2 to 6 weeks of cash projections, so you can see if problems are coming. You want to look at your receivables, you want to look at your payables, you want to look at your inventory if you have inventory. You want to look at your, make sure your taxes are being paid. You want PDFs of the tax return as well as the PDF of where the return was paid. You want to look at your sales every week. How's your sales doing, you know, compared to a budget? Like if your budget is $500,000 a month in sales and you're only at $125,000 at the middle of the month, bells should be going off. Like, what's going on? Is there some delay in getting stuff billed? Are we just not selling enough? So you could take action during the month rather than you find out the 20th of next month that, our sales were off 40% last month. Nothing you can do about it then. So you want to get actionable financial data that you can take, you know, you can do something about in real time. Secondly is, yes, you need to eliminate dysfunction by becoming systems driven rather than people dependent. And what do I mean by that? People dependent is where you have people with specialized knowledge and only they can perform some function in the company. And if something happens to them, that function just either doesn't exist or everything goes to hell. So you need to have everything documented in a procedure. You need everything to be coordinated in a nice system. That will allow the business to operate on its own. And the business owner just get out of the way, stop micromanaging, go be a visionary, go generate some revenue. That's your job. The business will operate fine on its own. But you need to have people who know that you trust them enough to get the job done and that they're authorized to take action and fix things, even though they may fix them different than you. And that's something else that I've brought into my practice, in my toolbox, is this concept of talent optimization. It's with Predictive Index, this software that helps you, I guess, gauge people, how are they going to act in a job, what's their natural way of being. and the right people in the right jobs. You know, if you have a job that's like repetitive over and over again, you don't want somebody that's like thinks out of the box, has a lot of energy, you know, has to have a lot of variety. You wouldn't put that kind of person in that kind of job because they'd be miserable and they'd probably screw it up.
Right.
And lastly is, you know, so you get your financial data, you take the dysfunction out, you get the right people in the team in the right places. And the last thing that's really the most important thing is long-range strategic planning. And you need, as a business owner and being a visionary, you have to design your business into the future. Well, you don't have to. But if you don't, where's your business going to wind up? Probably not where you want it to be. Now, exactly. Why? Because there's all these things buffeting your business. You know, different vendors are going to jack with you. They're going to change the terms. They're going to change product. They're coming into business, out of business. So you have your competitors. You'll have people come and go. You know, you might lose some good people for all kinds of reasons. Regulations, taxes, there's all kinds of things that affect your business. And if you're not navigating and designing your business in the future, you're going to wind up maybe stuck in the rock somewhere. So what that takes is, and the question that I use with this is, what is going to satisfy you? Are you satisfied with your business as it is now? And are you satisfied with the direction your business is headed into? And a lot of times they have no idea where their business is headed. You know, they're just trying to do what's worked for the last several years, but they're just going to keep doing that. And that's a lot of times that's a recipe for disaster just because everything changes.
Okay.
So, and what I mean by satisfaction is it all goes back to a mentor of mine about 35 years ago asked me, he said, "You want to know the secret to life?" I was like, "Absolutely." He goes, "Well, it's getting exactly what you want. You want to be ultimately satisfied." I was like, "Man, that sounds great." Because before that, everybody's like, "Oh, I want to be happy. And if only I had more, better, different, whatever, I'd be happy." Well,
right.
The only way you're going to have more, better, different is first you need to define it. And secondly, you need to go after it. So you have to take the time. It's kind of like in a relationship. You know, if in a relationship, when you first start dating, there's different personality types, different types of people. And you date them and you find that you're attracted to some and you really don't like others. I mean, for me, I learned early on, high drama and crazy. I don't want nothing to do with that. I will leave skid marks getting away from crazy.
I'm the same way.
And that's
stay away from the negativity.
Yeah. Oh God. But part of the process of finding out exactly what you want is experimenting with different things and finding out, yeah, there's some things I definitely don't want, or some things I thought would be satisfying. They're okay, but they're not that satisfying. I want more. So it takes a process over years. So you need to refine it. And I'm talking about being satisfied, like down to the details. How much revenue you want to produce? What territory do you want to be in? What product lines? What kind of people you want in your business? What image do you want what reputation do you want to have in the industry? Do you want to be the biggest? Do you want to be the best? Do you want to be the, you know, is your strategy more like you're going to be bargain basement? You're going to wholesale everything at a low markup, but have high volumes. You know, things like that. What kind of culture do you want to have in your business? And you get in touch with that and refine that over time. In the same time, you're making intermediate and short-term goals that you're assigning to people in your organization so that they have ownership in this. And they're going to help you get to where you're going. And you need to reward them. You need to acknowledge them. You need to get, they need to get that you know, that they can trust you. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're not going to step up. They're not going to give you the extra effort. But with the long range planning, you want them to be a part of it, assign tasks and deadlines and follow up on it, check it out every quarter or so and make sure that you're on, online and make it part of your regular business practice. And a lot of people talk about, we need to do some long-range planning, but they never do it.
Right.
And why is that? Because the consequence of not doing it doesn't show up next week. The consequence, it's important, but it's not urgent. So anybody who has a brain will do things that are both important and urgent. Why? Because the consequence is now. If you don't take care of this, there's going to be a price to pay for it. You don't pay your employees, there's a price to pay. You don't pay your taxes, you don't pay your bills, you don't pay the rent, you don't pay the bank, you don't go sell. there are prices to pay. Strategic planning, the consequence doesn't show up until whatever, 20, 30, 40 years from now. And by then, it's too late to do anything. So rather than just show up at your retirement or whenever it is you want to exit plan and things aren't anywhere near like you like it. You know, be in the process of making the business your ideal business, one that will ultimately satisfy you. And it's going to, what's going to happen is, what happens with that is when you're looking at the future and you're thinking about possibilities, you begin to embrace and begin to make things happen, your mood changes. Your mood becomes one more of ambition and gratitude and peace and joy. You know, joy to come to work again. And I meet so many business owners who have gotten to the point where they hate coming to work because it's like, what hand grenade is going to be dropped in my lap today? And again, that's the culture of them micromanaging, and, you know, they have to be the hero all day, but they know there's a burnout to that. It's not something that most people will do long term and enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen too many business owners that, you know, just, oh my God. And I'll never forget the one place I was working at, and we saw the ambulance pull up, and sure enough, the stress level just got to him.
Yeah.
And they rushed him off to the hospital. Come to find out he had a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah, what is the expression? Stress kills?
Yeah. Yeah, and so all these processes, and I love the what you have named this process, the well-oiled machine process.
Right.
And the different I'm looking at your website and some of the things under there, because when you're talking about strategic planning, and I love the little tagline there, dead fish can float downstream.
Yeah.
I mean, it's perfect. I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
And so when you go into, say, a new client and you show them this, talk to them about this well-oiled machine process, what's their first take on it?
Let's see, what do I want to call that? Anxious optimism. What they get a sense of is that things are going to be better, but it's not going to be easy. There's going to be some discomfort in getting from where you are now to where you want to be, where you say you want to be. And a lot of it comes down to, are you committed? You know, are you really committed? Because I'm not here to waste my time or yours or your money. I'm not here to half-ass anything. If you're really committed, I'm all in. But you need to be sure you're committed. And what do we mean by committed? The best definition I've ever heard of committed is, I accept no excuse that this does not happen.
Right.
When you're that, when you're all in like that, when you accept no excuse this doesn't happen, including you as an excuse, like if you're the excuse, you can't be the excuse. You know, because you're the owner, people always give you a pass. You know, you're not held accountable on if you forget to do something or you're late on something, nobody's gonna, you know, jump you.
Right.
So that, you know, you as the owner are generally the bottleneck. So I need your commitment, Mr. Owner, Miss Owner, that you're going to do what it takes to make this happen. And if you're not committed to it, I guarantee you it will not happen, because your organization is a manifestation of you. Your culture is a manifestation of you. The mood in here is a manifestation of you. It all starts with you. So if you're not 100% committed, guess what? Your organization is not going to be committed either. And it's going to take everybody's commitment to make this happen. I mean, you're talking about transforming people as well as transforming the culture of a business, the way it runs, the way people interact with each other. That doesn't happen, you know, just by itself. If it did, they wouldn't need people like me. In other words, if businesses could transform themselves without any outside coaching, they would, but they don't.
Let's take a little break here. I want to tell you about my friends over at Elite Power Washing. They take care of pressure washing, house washing, roof cleaning, gutter cleaning. They are truly the elite company when it comes to pressure washing. To see their work, to see what they've done, everything looks brand new. And there are even a lot of businesses out there that use them as well. Sean and Tina and their crew know what they're doing. They know how to make your property look like it's brand new. And again, I mean, they handle everything. Pressure washing, house washing, which, yes, there is a difference. Roof cleaning, gutter cleaning, window cleaning, concrete cleaning, paver cleaning, deck cleaning. So whether you're in Baltimore, Hartford, or Cecil County, if you need something taken care of when it comes to pressure washing, call the Elite Power Washing Team. They will get it done for you. They are the exterior cleaning professionals. They know what they're doing. Go to ElitePowerWashingMD.com. Or call them at 410 410-705-9274. Again, it's 410-705-9274. Tell them Rich from Harford County Living sent you.
And, you know, here's the other thing about, because people say, oh, you're a, you know, you're this, you're that. I see myself more as a guide or coach than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at, you know, top performing athletes at any level, high school, college, pros, they all have coaches. And the best ones have the best coaches. And why those guys, I mean, these guys, Michael Jordan needed a coach. Why do they need coaches? Because we can't see ourselves in performance. Your coach can. Not only that, your coach has distinctions about not only the way you play, but about strategy of the game. They analyze your opponents. There's all kinds of distinctions they can make for you that will up your game, not just a little bit, but a lot.
Right.
Same thing in business. You know, the whole thing is, what is a distinction? A distinction is, let me give you a business example. Take Excel. If you don't know Excel very well, it's kind of a, you know, it's a spreadsheet. And maybe, you know, you can put some numbers in, put some things, put a nice little whatever. But suddenly comes along, somebody comes along and shows you a little summation tool. You know, well, now you can, you know how to, you know, some columns and rows and stuff with just push of a button. Somebody comes along and shows you how you can pull data from other tabs in the worksheet to appear on that worksheet. And then they show you little, put the dollar sign before the letter and the dollar sign before the number. And no matter where you move that number that you picked up, it'll still pull in that same spot on your original tab.
Mm-hmm.
Then they show you things like the search engines or the search tools on it, or the if so, you know, all the rest, all that kind of stuff, pivot tables, all these neat things about Excel that you can take. Suddenly you can take massive amounts of data and slice them and dice them and do all these analytics and stuff that before, that is just a spreadsheet. That's what the distinction does. It helps you to really up your game. And the best distinctions are generally the simplest ones.
Right. Right. Now, something else that you do, and I love your explanation of this, you know, in your bio, the elimination of dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
Which you see a lot in businesses. Can you delve into that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of already talked about it. Generally, the dysfunction is because if you look at any organization, it's really just a network of conversations. And again, we talk about this, everybody having their narrative. Everybody has their own private conversation, their own, you know, this everything that happens to you, sight, sound, taste, everything, your narrative is telling you a story about it, right? You don't have a direct biological experience of life. You have an interpretive one. You can't put language down. If you don't believe me, try and not have language right now. You're going to be, that doesn't make sense. I can put my language down. No, you can't. Anyway, so everybody comes in with their own narrative, right? You have all these different conversations show up, and everybody has their own idea of how different jobs are supposed to run and how they're all supposed to, you know, look and timing and quality of the work. Everybody has different interpretations of that.
Right.
So one of the ways, so guess what happens? You have all this dysfunction. You have all these discordant conversations. They don't match up. The standards don't match up. You have a lot, and people always come to, you know, we all show up with all these unspoken expectations. And then why are they unspoken? Because we think everybody sees what we see and they don't. We only see what we see. So you have all that going on. Of course, you're going to have dysfunction. You're going to have bottlenecks. You're going to have people, you know, mad at each other, not getting along and competitive. And, you know, they're stupid over there and they think you're stupid too and all that kind of stuff. So the way to eliminate dysfunction is be systems driven. And the system has to be made up of procedures that are simple, that everybody can follow, that everybody's educated on. Everybody knows what they're supposed to do. Everybody knows what everybody else is supposed to do. The timing of it, the quality of it, everything. It's all written, you know. And the reason businesses don't have that is because when they start out small, you don't need it. You can coordinate a couple, three people and be clear. But you start having 30, 40, 50 people, you're going to have dysfunction if you don't have procedures all lined out. Really, everybody understand, like, this is like McDonald's. You can take 5 to 7 teenagers and run a McDonald's. How is that? Because they have procedures out the wazoo, and everybody knows how to do the fries. Everybody knows how to do the Big Mac. Everybody knows how to do everything.
Yep.
And it runs like a machine. I mean, A better example of that is the deck of an aircraft carrier. You know, you have these million-dollar jets taking off, landing on a ship that is both pitching and rolling on the high seas, and then you're having to stop these jets coming in for a landing at high speeds with wires. And if you know you mess it up, you might have a plane in the drink. You know,
you don't want that.
And then you launch them, but the superheated steam and the deck's going up and down, getting jets from below decks and what have you. And it's being run by 18 to 20 year olds.
Yeah.
18 to 20. You know what the average 18 to 20 year old does most of the day? You know, when they have free time, they're gaming or they're whatever. I was just going to say,
they're sitting at home on a game.
Yeah. So you got 18 to 20 year olds running the operations of an aircraft carrier deck, launching and receiving planes. And, you know, on a massive ship that's both pitching and rolling on the sea, how is that? How do you get that kind of precision? Because they drill, they drill, they drill, they drill, and they know exactly what they're supposed to do and everybody else is supposed to do. And they do not deviate. I mean, it's so – I mean, you're ex-Marine, yes?
Whoa, wait a minute. I'm sorry. What'd you say?
Are you an ex-Marine?
No such thing as an ex-Marine. Okay. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
You're a Marine, Stevie. Marine for life. I forgot that. I mean, you know, there were certain things you were drilled on, right?
Oh, yeah.
You probably never forget.
You don't forget it.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I love the way you explained that with the aircraft carrier. Mm-hmm. Because, and even with McDonald's, the reason things work is because, well, it's a manual. There's a manual for it.
Yeah.
Follow the manual.
Yeah.
And those things are put into place for a reason. Well, you know, you got to have good business systems in place.
Yeah. Do you remember, have you seen the movie Platoon?
Oh, God, yes. Love it.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember when Tom Berenger comes in, they're all sitting around griping, you know, the Barnes killed Elias. And they want to get him. And he says, and Barnes says, he says, because if y'all break down, the machine breaks down. And I'm not going to have that. And that's what he's talking about. He's not going to have the system, the military, which is a system, and everybody has their place. And you have, you know, mortarmen, you have riflemen, you have bunny, mm-hmm. the shotgun. You know, we have all these different things, that all these different functions in the military. And if you let people start doing things their own way and doing freestyle, free-range chicken, the system breaks down. You're not an effective army anymore. Same thing with the business.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's why it's called teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned earlier about your mentor. Who was your professional mentor?
A gentleman that I've gotten to be really close friends with, a gentleman by the name of Chuck Smith. He had an education company down here called Education for Living, and that's where I got introduced to the ontology of language. But he's retired now, but I still see him. I mean, we actually live right across the street from each other. Yeah. And nice. Yeah, he's a wonderful man, a lot of wisdom, you know. And he coached a lot of he coached a number of people to become coaches.
And actually, what would you say, the ontological coach?
Yeah, he brought the ontology of language to South Louisiana, and eventually Iowa and Tennessee. It branched out, but. On the road, we also met some other ontological coaches who were like, I mean, Master Julio Olalla of Newfield. Okay. I think it's called Newfield Network now. It's called Newfield Group at the time. That was the organization where I got certified as an ontological coach. Roger Burnell, another gentleman in the ontological business. But I said, I don't know if I said already, the gentleman who started created the discipline, the man by the name mm-hmm. of Fernando Flores. He's from Chile.
Okay.
In fact, there are several Chileans that were in the whole ontological design industry. There's Rafael Echeverria, Roger Galvin. I'm trying to think of names right now, and I'm drawing a blank. But yeah, to watch these guys in front of a room of people doing their coaching is just incredible. I mean, the thing.
Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. Ontological design of the ontology of language. Like I said, it was created by Fernando Flores. And basically, well, let me explain it. Let me back up a little bit. Ontology, what is that? Ontos, the Greek word ontos, which means to be, and ology, the study of. So it's a study of being in language. And again, the claim is that we're not just biological beings, we're also linguistic beings, and your language lives in your biology. You know, yes, it's in your brain, but if you want to know what I mean by your language lives in your biology, if you get embarrassed or you get angry or you get whatever, you have physical reactions to those emotions, right?
Right.
And there's some basic claims that Fernando Flores made. One is that language is generative. In other words, it generates your reality, which we've talked about already. Your perspective, the distinctions you live by, the assessments, the prejudices, the right, wrong, good, bad, like it, don't like it, make sense, don't make sense, all that is going to tell you, is going to give you a narrative of your experience, and that will gauge it. So what a good ontological coach can do is help you examine those discourses or those conversations that you suffer from and help you reinterpret them in a way that empowers you rather than disempowers you. You know, we pick up all kinds of crazy notions about ourselves from early childhood, you know, things like I'm unlovable or I'm stupid.
Right.
Or, you know, and some of those they've been there so long and they're so in the background. We don't see them as, we're not even aware of them, but we don't really see them as an assessment or a story. We see them as the truth. And it's not the truth. It's like, you know, who made that up?
Yeah.
There's no such thing as unlovable. There's no such thing. Well, I guess there is something. It's stupid. If you, medically, they have different, you know, IQs and what have you. But those are the kind of things deep down that have people self-sabotage, right?
Yeah.
Or do self-destructive things. So as a coach, as an ontological coach, you get to work with people. Again, a good ontological coach is not going to give you the answer. They're going to ask you the right questions. They're going to ask you.
Like, I like that.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like somebody that, like a therapist that helps people with mental health, should be doing this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten that a lot over the years. Like, where'd you learn all this psychology? It's not psychology; it's the ontology of language. And again, I've seen people go through the training, different levels of the ontology of language, and I've seen. But yeah, I've been going to therapy for 20 years, and I've not gotten that. I've got way more out of this one weekend than I've got out the last 20 years of therapy. Because it just shows you that a lot of the stuff you suffer from, in fact, I would think that most things, all things you suffer from, originate somewhere in your discourse, somewhere in your narrative.
Yeah.
Something that you're living by that's causing you to suffer. And one of the ways to not suffer or to actually become empowered by that same thing is to reinterpret it. I mean, you can tell the same story about an event. I mean, you can tell different stories about the same event. I mean, you know, if for the audience that's listening, think about some significant event in your life, and then see if you could come up with like 3, 4, 5 ways to interpret that story, like a good way, a happy way, a sad way, an angry way. You can come up with those stories and which ones are valid and the ones you choose.
So, but now you were taught this. You went through a class for that, right?
I went through a number of courses, as well as individual coaching with some of the gentlemen that I just named.
Now, do you teach it as well?
I used to teach courses on it. There was a course called the Results Program that I really loved. It was about goal setting and leadership, community building.
Okay.
And then there was another course that I designed and co-led with Chuck Smith called Designing Adulthood. You know, like, what is adulthood?
Right.
So yeah, I used to teach a lot, and it was one of those things, kind of like the radio show. I mean, I did it for about five, 7 years. I don't remember exactly. It's kind of with working full time and doing that on the weekends and everything else, it got to be a bit much.
Yeah. Now, do you know if there's any good books on that? Because this sounds really interesting. I want to study this now.
Actually, there is. There's a good friend of mine, Chalmers Brothers. He wrote 2 books.
Okay.
And he's an excellent ontological coach. He's worked with Social Security, he's worked with Coca-Cola, Harley Davidson. He's worked some really big businesses. He's done some TED Talks. He works a lot with Vistage. I don't know if you're familiar with Vistage.
Uh-uh.
It's an exec. What a Vist, if you're a Vistage chair, I think you have 9 to 12 different business owners that are in your group. And you talk about different topics. You get together once a month. And anyway, it's like a business coaching program. And Chalmers does a whole lot with Vistage. He goes around and I guess he's a guest speaker or whatever for a lot of the Vistage chairs that are out there. Anyway, his two books. One is called Language and the Pursuit of Happiness. Excellent beginning book on the distinctions, like what are the five speech acts, what are the discourses, the different emotions, what is the mood, you know, how to be an observer of the observer that you are. Okay. This way, we're all observers, right? We all have a narrative. What people suffer from is because they can't, again, because we need a coach. You can't, for the most part, we're not trained to be observers of the observer that we are, right?
Huh.
I mean, if you think about it, you're pretty much on automatic. You know, most people just don't automatic all day. They're just operating by the narrative. And they don't stop and say, why is that? And how do I look when I do that? And what's driving that kind of action, that kind of reaction, that kind of emotion, that kind of mood? What is it that's driving all that? Most people, you know, probably wouldn't be able to do it very well. And they really, it's pretty tough if you don't, if you're not practiced at it, you're not skilled at it, it's pretty tough. Most people are not going to do it, try and do it for very long. That's what, again, the coaching, the need for a coach. But that's it's a great book. I've given
it out. Is it, the language?
Language and the Pursuit of Happiness by Chalmers Brothers. And he wrote a second book called Leadership. Language and the Pursuit of Excellence in Leadership.
Okay.
Another great book that he co-wrote, he co-authored. But he's got a website, chalmersbrothers.com, and you can buy the books there. I think they're on Amazon as well. You can look at some of the programs he's got.
Interesting. I'm going to have to look into that, because that sounds, well, number one, because you do podcasts, you did the radio show, and I'm sure it even helps with that, right?
What's that? It helped what?
With your radio show that you used to do, and you do a podcast as well,
right,
correct?
Right.
And I'm sure that helps with that. Yeah, and with your consulting as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I got to say, it's probably the most significant thing that I've ever learned in my life. You know, I've learned a lot of stuff, but it's probably the most effective tool, I guess, more than anything. It's a highly effective tool in business and life, with your kids, with your, you know, all your relationships. It's been very, very highly impactful for me.
Well, I'm going to be ordering that when I'm finished with you today. I never knew what that was. And then when you explained because I loved the idea what you said about, you know, as a kid, all these things that you're being told, you know, whether you're stupid or whatever, and it sticks in the back of your head. Mm-hmm. That's why I brought to, you know, I was thinking of therapists right away. Yeah. Cause I do a lot. I talk to a lot of people on mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh my God, this is perfect. This is something I am definitely going to have to, and now I'm going to have to get you on again after I read it and find out if I learned anything from it.
I'd love to. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, there's a couple other claims about the ontology of languages. Language is action, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you speak, you act. When you listen, you act. And I want to make this thing between listening and hearing. Hearing is just you're being quiet while the other person's speaking, but you're not really paying attention to what they're saying, even though the sounds are hitting your ear and it's going in.
Going in one ear and out the other.
Yeah, if you're listening, you're actually taking action to interpret what they're saying. And not only that, you're listening to the listening that they're listening, that having them say what they say. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, 100%. And
when you get practiced as a coach, you can actually get pretty good at picking up on what somebody is listening to, the narrative they're listening to, just out of the way they act and things they say and that kind of stuff. And it looked like mind reading, but it's not.
That's one of the things I love about doing this in person, because you can tell when you're talking to somebody, their body language.
Yeah.
Tells a lot too.
Oh, absolutely.
Their eyes, everything. And it can tell a lot. And even though I've been doing this for a long time, I'm always studying, because I always believe nobody's an expert.
Nope.
Nobody knows it all. Things are always changing, and you can always make yourself better at doing what you do.
And something I've always told my kids, I don't care what you do in your life, no matter, you know, if you're working for somebody, if you run your own business or whatever, the education never stops.
No.
You're always learning.
Yeah. Yeah. The bigger your sphere of knowledge gets, and, you know, so there's, think of your knowledge as like a globe, right? Your sphere of knowledge. So the stuff you know is in that globe. Everything else you don't know is outside that globe. As your sphere of knowledge gets bigger and bigger, what happens? It encounters a whole bunch more that you don't know. So generally, the people who are really, I guess, educated, studied, learned, wise, whatever, they really get that no matter how much you know, there's so much more that you don't know. You probably won't be able to learn. So
exactly,
people who act like they know it all generally don't know very much.
Exactly. Yeah, there is no such thing as a Mr. or Mrs. Know-it-all.
Right. The last distinction I want to make about the ontology of language is that it's also generative in that the present that you and I are experiencing right now was generated in the past. In fact, it was generated several months ago. And it happened in language. It happened in email exchange.
Right.
You know, so if you don't like what's happening, you know, if you don't like what's going on in your life, you're going to need to change your language. You need to change your conversations. You need to make different offers, different requests, different promises. You probably need to rearrange your primary declarations about who you are in the world. You know, your language is going to need to change. If you want to change, your language will have to change, period. So, you know, you invent a different future with different conversations. You can make different requests, different offers. You make different promises. And, you know, you learn to live in much better moods. Anyway, so yeah, language is action, language is generative. Those are the two big claims in the ontology of language, but it's so much more than just that.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be studying this now, without a doubt. Like I said, I'm going to order his book as soon as we're done here, because this is something I definitely want to learn. But more importantly, there's a lot of people getting into business, and there are a lot of businesses out there that need your help. So tell them again how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, Carrie Prejean. There's also I also have a business page on LinkedIn called CFO Consulting LLC. But my main website is strategicbusinessadvisors.org.
Very simple to remember. Carrie, is there anything you would like to add?
No, I've really enjoyed the conversation this morning.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And just one thing I got to ask you.
Yes, sir.
So if you weren't doing this, what would you be doing?
I don't know. I really I have two big hobbies. One is cycling and the other one is cooking and baking. So I don't know.
Maybe, oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, if I wasn't doing this, if I was really doing something else that I loved, I mean, you can't. I'm too old and I'm too big to be a professional cyclist, you know. But I could be have a bakery or something like that. Maybe cook for a restaurant because I really enjoy cooking a lot.
So what's your favorite thing to cook? What is your signature dish?
Well, probably the thing I'm known best for is pralines. That's everybody loves them. The other thing that's probably right behind that, it was New York style cheesecake with strawberry sauce.
Wait a minute, what?
New York style cheesecake with strawberry sauce.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right, now I got to get down to Baton Rouge. And you're going to have to make that. And I got to try crabs down there because, and correct me if I'm wrong, you guys boil your crabs. You don't steam them, right?
Right. Yeah.
I've never had crabs like that. So I need to get down there. I'll hook up with you.
Yeah.
You got to boil me some crabs and then I want that cheesecake.
Right. Cheesecake, yeah. That. The other thing you'd have to try would be fried soft shell crab.
Oh, that I've had.
Oh, you have? Okay.
That's big up here too. Well, not as big as your steam crabs, but no, my mother got me hooked on them.
Yeah.
A fried soft shell crab sandwich. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. It never fails. Why do I always end up talking about food right before lunch? always, Cary, it's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot and continue success. And thank you, you know, for the conversation and the information on that book, because actually, have you written a book yet?
No.
Well, when are you going to do that? You know, that's what the podcast is for, right?
Yeah. I'm thinking about writing a book on the whole thing about satisfaction and how powerful a tool can be if you use it. Like getting really, really clear on what's going to absolutely, totally satisfy you in all areas of life, not just business. I mean, if you think about a relationship you want to have, what would totally satisfy you in a relationship and not like the other person makes me happy, because it can't make you happy. You make you happy or unhappy. But what would the other person do? How would the other person act in your relationship that would be really satisfying for you? How would you act in relationship? What kind of things would you do? That kind of stuff. So if you can apply it to relationship, you can also apply it to, say, all the different domains of action of human existence, like your body, like your career, your work, mm-hmm. your play, your spirituality, all that stuff. And it takes some work, but the rewards are huge.
I think that'd be a great book. Yeah. I think you need to start working on it as soon as we're finished here.
Yes, sir.
And tell everybody that I forgot to ask you this, but tell everybody the name of your podcast.
Ah, Strategic Business Advisors Podcast.
Which is also, you have links to that from your website, right?
Yes. You have all the episodes up there and some of the podcasts that I've been on. So
Perfect. Cary, once again, thanks a lot and continued success. And I just hope that the next time I talk to you, your business has doubled even more. And you've written that book, and I've had the cheesecake.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate being on the show.
Take care.
Yes, sir.
Episode. And if you need his assistance, if you want to elevate your business, if you want to start using the well-oiled machine process, contact him. StrategicBusinessAdvisors.org. And I'll have that link in the show notes for you as well. I'm also going to recommend his podcast. Now, he hasn't dropped an episode since September, but my understanding is he's going to get back to doing it. So I'm going to make sure I have the link for his podcast in there as well. If you would like to be a guest on the podcast, or if you would like to recommend somebody for me to get on the podcast, or if there's a topic you want me to talk about, just go to conversationswithrichbennett.com, click the Be a Guest link, and fill out the form, and I'll get in contact with you and we'll get everything set up. And while you're there, please subscribe to the podcast as well as the newsletter. And check out all my sponsors and, of course, my co-hosts. Please show your support for all of them as well. Until next time, my name is Rich Bennett. Stay safe and thank you for joining the conversation. So I'm sitting here with Michelle of Align Rehabilitation, and she is really growing and has something coming up on May 3rd.
On May 3rd, Align Rehabilitation will be having our grand opening of our brand new physical therapy facility. We are directly next door to Real Life Prosthetics, who has also expanded their lab as they build out their prostheses. So May 3rd is grand opening. I invite everyone to come tour both my brand new facility for physical therapy treatment, as well as see what Real Life Prosthetics has done with their new lab.
And what time is it?
It's 11 to 2, mm-hmm. and then the ribbon cutting is at 11:15.
And so what's the address?
The address is 3435 Box Hill Corporate Center Drive, Suite C, Abingdon, Maryland, 21009.